Well, good morning, church. Man, it's good to see y'all this morning. Good to be with you as always. We're missing a bunch of folks today. I don't know who all is not here today, but if you know someone who's not here today, please turn their names into the elders. They have got they're compiling a list. Not Russ, because he's not here. Find one of the other ones. Anyway, we're glad you're here. I know we've started summer break, and a lot of folks are out traveling, and certainly hope that they and their families have a good time away. My family actually will be gone next Sunday, which is the Sunday the Lord ordained for us to be away. But if you are going to be traveling, we hope that you have a good time, a vacation, or get away with your family and your loved ones. Who here, as a kid, remembers the game Follow the Leader? Do you remember that game? As I was like writing this and I was thinking about it, I was like, I don't remember the last time that I don't remember the last time I participated. I don't even remember the last time I saw that game. Do they still do that game in schools and stuff now? Principal? Yeah, do they? Yeah, sure. She doesn't know. Anyway, stays in her office. Anyway, I don't know if anyone still does it, but the way it's played, if you're unfamiliar, if you're under my age or they don't still do it or whatever, basically everyone gets into a line. And the person at the front of the line is the leader. And this leader is the most important person. So the leader gets to make all the decisions about where the group goes and what they do and how they walk or how fast they go. And, you know, the leader raises their right hand and everybody in line behind them is supposed to raise their right hand. And the leader hops over a ditch and then everybody in the group has to hop over the ditch, right? Everyone just follows and does what the person in the front does. And at least the way we played it as kids, there weren't any real winners or losers in Follow the Leader. Just everyone got to take turns being at the front of the line, and then everyone also got turns learning what it means to be a follower, just doing what the person in front of you does. So there was no winner to the game, no loser to the game, but in real life, that's not the way it works, is it? In real life, there are winners and losers. In real life, there are good leaders and there are less than good leaders. We'll call them bad leaders. In real life, a good boss at work can improve the work lives of everyone. Maybe you've had the good fortune of working for someone or with someone who was your boss who made life better. Maybe the way they treated people, the way they arranged their schedules, or the way they did their pay, or whatever it was. You've worked for or with someone who made work life better because they were a good boss. In real life, a bad leader, say at home, can make the home lives of everyone in the family absolutely miserable through their treatment of everyone else, the way they talk to them, the way they deal with them, whether they pay attention to them. A bad leader at home can wreck absolutely everything. Godly leaders in a church can help create a healthy spiritual family. And understand what I'm saying by that. It's not saying that everyone who goes to church with a godly leader is going to live a perfect life. No, and I would say godly leaders would tell you even they don't live perfect lives. But a godly leader in a church environment will help create an atmosphere where when someone stumbles, they are lifted up in love. Maybe you've had the good fortune of being in a church like that. Or maybe you've had the misfortune of being parts of congregations where when someone stumbled, they are ostracized and cut off from the love of their brothers and sisters in Christ. Selfish leaders in, say, politics, they will use anyone and everyone at their disposal for their own benefit, regardless of how it affects the people who are following them. They will burn up and burn through their money, their time, their resources, their energy. They will absolutely burn through anyone and everyone. Because leaders make a very real and very important difference in our lives, even when we're not paying close attention. So as we're continuing our study through the book of Hosea, we're going to see the difference that Israel's leaders made in the life of that nation. And there's several. We're not even going to be able to get to them all. But Israel's leaders, whether it's the priests or the prophets or the royalty, the kings, or even the fathers and the husbands, what did they do? What was their role in the life of Israel as a nation? Now, God's first reprimand for them, if you've been paying attention in Hosea, you know the nation of Israel, the northern kingdom, they're not in good shape. God has pronounced a judgment on them. He's sort of, in beginning in chapter 4, opened a court case against them. And we talked about that last week, but what we didn't have time to really get into was the people that God specifically calls out. And so God brings this first reprimand, this first address for the priests of the nation. And listen to what he says to the priests beginning in verse 6. He says, "Because you have rejected knowledge, I also reject you as my priests." So he's addressing the priests here, right? You've rejected knowledge of me, so I'm going to reject you as my priest. Because you have ignored the law of your God, I will also ignore your children. The more priests there were, the more they sinned against me. They exchanged their glorious God for something disgraceful. They feed on the sins of my people and relish their wickedness. And what the priests do, the people also do. So now I will punish both priests and people for their wicked deeds. So instead of teaching the people faithfulness, love, knowledge of God, they failed to feed them and instead fed upon them. Now, instead of using their position to teach the law, the priests used the people for personal financial gain. They were reaping the benefits of the people's idolatry. So if the people are worshiping idols and that is somehow benefiting the priests, it was the Old Testament equivalency of selling indulgences. Are you familiar with selling indulgences? Long time ago, in the Catholic Church, they were looking to build St. Peter's Cathedral, this enormous, beautiful monument. If you ever go to Rome, see it. It is astounding. I haven't seen it in person. My son did. He conveyed it to me. I'm telling you, you can even go online and see the pictures and see how impressive this was for a piece of medieval architecture. So they were looking to build it, but they didn't have the funds to do it. So what they did was they sold indulgences. Basically, you haven't sinned yet, but if you would like forgiveness for the sin that you're going to commit, you can pay us a certain amount. So what happened was the people who had the money, the financial means, were like, oh, it's prepaid forgiveness. And they built enough money, or gathered enough money to build this. And this, what's going on in Hosea is something like the Old Testament equivalency of that. They were failing the people morally and instructionally because it benefited them. After all, if no one in the congregation cares about sin, then it's okay for me to sin. That was their attitude, right? So God says to both of them, since neither of you care about sin, both of you are going to be going down together. I'm going to take you both down at the same time. So it sounds like, well, you know, just everybody did wrong, everybody's getting punished, but no. Make no mistake about it, God is holding these spiritual leaders, these priests, God is holding them especially culpable. In other words, if the priests had been living like God wanted them to live as priests, none of this would have happened. Whether the people acknowledged it or not, they were playing a big game of follow the leader. And they were going right where the priests were leading them. And again, everyone is accountable for their own sins. If you go out this week and you just live your life on the wild side, and you have to, you commit all these grievous sins that bring destruction on you and on your family and on your loved ones and on this congregation, you could do that. And you will have to answer for that. But additionally, spiritual leaders, your spiritual leaders, also have to answer for that. Did we show them the right way? And maybe they did and you ignored it. Did we lead them in the right direction? And maybe they did and you ignored it. So everybody answers for their own sins, but God's spiritual leaders, in this case the priests, also have to answer for the sins of their flock. Because their flock was wandering all over the place. And as a result of their failed leadership, the people were neck deep in ritualistic idol worship, specifically of Baal. And if you ever want some light reading on the ritual worship of Baal, don't do it before you go to bed. It's a terrible, terrible thing, right? Including some of the other Canaanite gods that were there. It included, among other things, prostitution. As ugly and heinous as that would be, it was a part of their worship on a widespread scale. Lots of people together. Now, idol worship had run rampant. It was all over the Israel. Not only had they built temples, specific temples, for the worship of these false gods, they were also gathering places on mountaintops. He even says, like, under shady trees at one point. And it's just anywhere people might get together. It's a little cooler on the mountaintop. Let's go up there. We can worship. We'll be closer to the gods up there. Or it's a little cooler under the shade tree. We'll gather under there. And that's a good place to hang out in the middle of the day. I understand that. But they were worshiping idols and participating in these activities all over the place. No part of the land was protected from their sins. So this is what he says. Therefore, your daughters turn to prostitution and your daughters-in-law to adultery. I will not punish your daughters when they turn to prostitution, nor your daughters-in-law when they commit adultery. Now, wait a minute. Wait, let's just pause right here. We're in the book of Hosea. And the book of Hosea is about this failed relationship between God and Israel because of Israel's unfaithfulness, as illustrated. And Hosea is married to this woman, Gomer, who keeps cheating on him and leaving him and coming back. So you would think that God would punish this terrible, terrible sin. Why would he not punish these women for doing this awful, sinful thing? The answer is, it's because the men themselves consort with harlots and sacrifice with shrine prostitutes. A people without understanding will come to ruin. The ritual worship of these other gods was about as far as you could get from the worship of Yahweh God. So instead of reinforcing a relationship between husband and wife or father and children, they actually encouraged and had activities of a sinful nature. They did things that broke down the family rather than encouraging the family. And even though you could go with the everyone else was doing it argument, God is specifically holding the husbands and fathers responsible. Because instead of protecting their daughters and their daughters-in-law, who essentially become their daughters after marrying their sons, they were leading these young women down a path to destruction. They had failed, the fathers, the husbands, the men, had failed their families by their terrible moral example. The priests had failed by living immorally and also failing to teach. They'd done that. But the fathers were right there with the families, living out an example of ungodliness. It always says, husbands and fathers, I'm not going to hold your daughters and daughters-in-law accountable for what they did, because this is where you led them. This is the path you set out for them. Therefore, you are responsible for what is happening. I mean, it is bad leadership. And he goes on to get specific with some of the other leaders, but here's how he kind of sums it up in Hosea chapter 5, verse 1. Hear this, you priests. Pay attention, you Israelites. Listen, royal house. So now we're talking about not just the priests and the fathers and the husbands, but also the royal family, right? This judgment is against you. Failed leadership at every level of society had produced a nation. This is the way he described the people. That they didn't know him, but they were incapable of learning about him. God likens them, and he talks about strong drink in here. And so, like, if I grew up, you know, pretty conservative Church of Christ, and any verse that had anything to do with alcohol, that was written in the back of my Bible. I was all about that. And certainly that was going on too, but the purpose that he uses that for is not just to say, hey, don't drink. What he's describing is the way that they think. He said, you act like a bunch of drunkards. And I don't know if you've ever had the blessing of being around someone who has had too much to drink. We're just going to call it a blessing because it's a learning example, right? God says, y'all are like a bunch of alcoholics because your thinking is so fuzzy, I can't get you to do anything rational. In other words, you've had too much to drink, and so you keep making bad decision after bad decision after bad decision after bad decision. And he compares them to like a stubborn calf. And again, if you grew up on a farm, maybe you've tried to lead a stubborn calf. You know what that's like. It's reasoning with a wall, right? And he says, that's the way the people have become. You've become so intoxicated with your idol worship and your prostitution and your immoral lifestyle. You keep thinking like, well, look, everything seems to be going well. Well, our nation is prosperous. We're pretty safe right now. And so you're thinking all this has not got any consequence. And God is saying it absolutely has consequences. You're just too fuzzy-headed to see them right now. You are too fuzzy-headed to see that your really strong military leaders have led you down a path to a war you cannot win. You are too fuzzy-headed right now to see that your spiritual leaders, the priests, have led you down a path wherein you don't even know God. You are too fuzzy-headed right now to see that the men, the husbands and the fathers in your families, the men that you look up to who lead your families, they have led you down a path to destruction of your family. The military leaders led to military destruction. The spiritual leaders led to spiritual destruction. The fathers and the husbands led them down a path to familial destruction. But they were so intoxicated with their sin that they couldn't even see it. Good leadership really matters. I think that's why when we get to the New Testament, and Jesus over and over says to people, follow me, right? Follow me, follow me. And certainly we could get behind the follow Jesus movement, but what does that even look like? And so we look at maybe the letters of the Apostle Paul or some of the other epistles. I thought of Hebrews chapter 6, verses 11 and 12. Where the writer of Hebrews says, we want each of you to show the same diligence to the very end so that what you hope for may be fully realized. In other words, I want you to stay where you are, keep going on this path so that you can get where you want to go. Where you want to go is being like Christ. So stay on this path so you can achieve that goal. And then he continues on by saying this. He says, we do not want you to become lazy, but to imitate those who through faith and patience inherit what has been promised. Don't imitate just anyone. You may have a boss at work who is really funny or rich or smart or strong or whatever reason is really compelling figure to follow. I know Zach was telling me his former boss at Shelton Dentistry was one of those guys. You just couldn't help but follow him, but not always in a good direction. Right? You may have someone like that in your life, but you need to be smarter than that. Don't imitate just anyone. You may have a father or a mother that you dearly love and who dearly loved you. But just because they loved you and you loved them doesn't always mean they're the best people to imitate. You may have a political figure that you look up to, and maybe they agree with you on some really important things. But just because they agree with you on some really important things doesn't mean they're a good person to follow. Look at the person and see, is that person's life like Jesus? Are they saying and doing things like Jesus? Because if I'm not following someone who through faith and patience is inheriting what has been promised, I'm following the wrong person. And if you, brothers and sisters, are in a leadership position, whether you're a father or a mother or a teacher or a boss at work or you're an elder in a congregation or a ministry leader, if you have a leadership position, you've now got this extra obligation to be like this, not only for yourself, but for the sake of those who are following you. It is an especially heavy burden that should not be taken lightly. And my prayer for you, my prayer for us as a congregation, is that we, unlike the children of Israel, but like the church that Paul was writing to, may have the spiritual discernment to follow, to imitate, to be like those who through faith and patience inherit what has been promised, life with Christ. And if we can encourage you this morning, lift you up, we want to do that now. Won't you come as we stand and as we sing?